more money. VOA One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Ana Mateo and Mario Ritter Jr. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. Finally, Katie Weaver and I explore Utah's Zion National Park. But first, here is Ana Mateo.
At her home in northern Afghanistan, a 19-year-old woman draws her own image. In the drawing, she is covered by a blue burqa and is inside a cage. The woman, named Kushi, is a former university student. She once attended classes in law and political science at Northern Balkh Province's main university. However, the Taliban closed it and other learning institutions to women in December of 2022. Since then, Kushi has developed deep sadness or depression. She now needs mental health treatment. Part of her treatment includes art therapy classes. She told Reuters reporters, "When I realized that I am not mentally well, I got sad. I was not happy at all. I was always depressed. I felt like a bird being stuck in a cage, one who has lost all her happiness." Kushi, who is identified by only one name for security reasons, added, "After the Taliban banned girls from universities and announced that girls can no longer continue our education, I felt so upset." Over time, she said her mental health got worse. She finally decided to see a mental health doctor, called a psychiatrist. Kushi's psychiatrist cannot be named for security reasons. But he told Reuters that art studios are the only places that remain for helping his patients. He said, "Art studios have become the only place where girls can clear their minds, catch up with old friends, make new friends, and apart from that, they can learn art too." Inside a small art studio in Balkh's capital, Mazar-i-Sharif, paintings hang on the walls. Several young women, including Kushi, have gathered for a pencil drawing class. Many of them have been sent here at the recommendation of a mental health expert. The goals are to ease their loneliness and learn a new skill, as well as talk about their situations and take medication. One of the former university students in the pencil drawing class said, "When I felt depressed, the doctor prescribed me to go to a place where I can calm my mind. I chose the art studio. Not only did I make good friends here, I also receive art therapy." Kushi said art therapy gave her a break from her home situation. She said it also gave her a bit of hope for the future. "It gives me a sense of accomplishment for having made something. Overall, drawing empowers me with confidence," she said. "I'm disappointed in my life, but I am not giving up. I will fight. I hope things will get better in the future." Cushy now sees her psychiatrist twice a month. The doctor used to see 4 to 5 patients a day, but he said he now sees 10 to 15 patients each day. Most of them are women. The increase became especially noticeable after the Taliban banned female students from attending universities, the doctor said. A source told Reuters that since the Islamic Emirate, the Taliban administration, started ruling the country, they have imposed so many restrictions on women. This source adds that women have been banned from universities, as well as amusement parks and beauty salons. Health organizations estimate half of Afghanistan's 40 million people have experienced mental struggles after many years of war. There have been few dependable studies on mental health issues in the country. But doctors and aid workers say that more women are struggling with mental health after government orders to restrict their work and education. Afghan women and mental health experts say that many women are now struggling with a deep sense of hopelessness and mental health problems. This is especially true of women in cities. Those women gained openings in education and work during the 20-year presence of foreign troops and a Western-backed government. The Taliban closed universities to women in December of last year. The move led to rare public protests. The decision came after the closure of most girls' high schools. Later, the Taliban ordered most female humanitarian workers not to work. The orders restricting women from public life have led to strong international criticism. Western governments have said it is a main problem standing in the way of officially recognizing the Taliban's government. The Taliban government took over the area as foreign forces left 2 years ago. The Taliban say they respect women's rights in line with their view of Islamic law and Afghan culture. I'm Ana Mateo.
Fishermen who work on Venezuela's Lake Maracaibo say fish stocks are decreasing as pollution grows worse. Lake Maracaibo is 600 kilometers west of Venezuela's capital, Caracas. It is a center of Venezuela's oil production, but environmentalists say it is becoming a polluted wasteland. They blame too much oil exploration, poor maintenance, outdated infrastructure, and a lack of waste treatment systems. There are thousands of kilometers of pipelines under the lake, and oil leaks take place often. The lake is fed by many rivers and streams, but it also receives wastewater from Zulia, Merida, and Trujillo states, where 5.3 million people live. Waste from the most distant state of Norte del Santander also drains into the lake. Beltran Briseño teaches at the University of Zulia and is head of the research laboratory in the town of Maracaibo. He said fertilizers, human waste, and other chemicals flow into Lake Maracaibo. This leads to high concentrations of nitrogen and phosphorus. These substances support the growth of cyanobacteria, which can have poisonous effects on water animals and humans. Cyanobacteria, or blue-green algae, are linked with mass fish deaths. Jose Aular is a 61-year-old fisherman. He said fish do not come near the shore because of the algae. He also said the water has caused his skin to become unhealthy with a rash. In the early 1900s, Lake Maracaibo was the heart of Venezuela's oil industry. Environmentalists say the pollution worsened in the early 1930s, when a canal was dug and connected the lake with the Caribbean Sea. The project permitted large oil tankers to navigate the lake, but also let seawater into the lake. This killed some freshwater life. Yordi Vicuña is a 33-year-old fisherman. He said that in the past, you could go out fishing and catch 700 kilograms of shrimp. But now, he said, it takes fishermen several days to catch only 8 kilograms of shrimp. Fishermen avoid using their nets because they fear they will be damaged. Crude oil covers boats and damages fishing nets and boat motors, Vicuña said. Briceño said many years of worsening pollution are being felt near the lakeshore with bad smells, oil slicks, and poisonous algae. Briceño warned, there is no magic formula to rescue the lake if people continue to pollute it. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Researchers say they have found evidence that ancient Mars experienced both wet and dry climate cycles. The new evidence is based on data collected by an exploring vehicle on Mars called Curiosity. The Explorer, or rover, is operated by the American Space Agency, NASA. Scientists say the finding suggests Mars may have once held the right conditions to support life. They describe their findings in a study appearing this month in the publication Nature. Today, Mars is a dusty, cold desert. But past research has shown the planet was once home to a large system of rivers and lakes. Many studies have suggested the presence of water billions of years ago may have created conditions to support life. But there has been no clear evidence Mars also experienced dry periods. The Curiosity rover has been exploring Mars's huge Gale crater since 2012. The area is believed to have contained a lake at one time and has a large mountain of sediment nearly 6 kilometers high. The researchers said that while climbing the side of the sediment mountain in 2021, Curiosity found salt remains that formed a hexagonal shape in soil that dated back nearly 4 billion years. The rover's instruments identified the shape as cracks in dried mud. When a lake dries up, the mud cracks, and when it fills back up, the cracks heal, said William Rapine. He is a researcher at France's National Center for Scientific Research, CNRS, and the lead writer of the study. Rapine said when this process is repeated, the cracks position themselves in hexagons or six-sided shapes. This hexagonal evidence suggests there were long dry periods in the Gale Crater area. NASA said the evidence that rivers and lakes on ancient Mars began to dry up at times provides evidence that climate cycles repeatedly happened. Rapine said the finding is the first tangible proof that Mars had a wet-dry climate. The researchers say having both wet and dry seasons, as we have on Earth, could have provided the right conditions for life to form on Mars. Curiosity and another rover operating on Mars, Perseverance, have already identified evidence of organic compounds that could suggest the presence of past life forms. But Rapine noted these building blocks need the right mix of conditions in order to support life. In a world that's too dry, these molecules never have the chance to form, nor do they in a world that's too wet, he said. Ashwin Vasavada is a project scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. He said in a statement, "Over 11 years, we've found ample evidence that ancient Mars could have supported microbial life. Now the mission has found evidence of conditions that may have promoted the origin of life, too. Such evidence would never have been found on Earth," Rapine said. "This is because tectonic plates on our planet repeatedly recycle the surface, burying evidence from before the time life formed." Rapine noted this means that studying Mars, which does not have tectonic plates, could help scientists solve the mystery of how life began on Earth. "It's pretty lucky of us to have a planet like Mars nearby that still holds a memory of the natural processes which may have led to life," he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about this week's Science Report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thank you for having me.
Your report this week described newly discovered evidence that ancient Mars experienced both wet and dry climates. How does this new research differ from earlier findings about climate conditions on Mars?
Yes, so the main difference is that the researchers say their new study provides the first clear evidence that Mars likely had both a wet and dry climate billions of years ago. Past studies have provided evidence that ancient Mars was a very wet planet with large river systems, lakes, and possibly even an ocean. But the latest study is really the first time there has been clear evidence of a dry climate on the planet.
And the finding, which was made by NASA's Curiosity rover, happened in an interesting way. What can you tell us about that?
So the researchers said their observation showed a pattern that appeared in salt deposits on the Mars surface. These salt deposits formed a hexagonal shape. And they say Curiosity's instruments identified these shapes as cracks that formed in dry mud. So the team concluded this suggests that ancient Mars likely experienced a series of wet-dry cycles.
And the study also provides new evidence that life possibly existed on early Mars, correct?
Yes, that's right. The researchers noted that possibility, especially since such wet-dry cycles also happened on Earth, where scientists believe early life forms began developing billions of years ago.
Okay, thanks again for being here, Brian, and thanks for that report.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
The state of Utah is home to five major national parks. They are among the most famous parks in the United States. Our national parks journey brings us to the southeastern part of the state. Here you will find narrow canyons, steep cliffs, and hidden river valleys. Welcome to Zion National Park.
Zion sits within a desert landscape. The 260-kilometer-long Virgin River runs through it. It provides water for more than 1,000 kinds of plants to grow and over 100 kinds of animals to live, including the desert tortoise, desert bighorn sheep, and mountain lions. River water has also carved out the area's spectacular canyons and gorges. One of them, called Zion Canyon, stretches more than 20 kilometers through the park. In some places, it is more than 600 meters deep. At its most narrow point, it is just 6 meters across. Zion is one of the 10 most visited parks in the country. Travelers from America and around the world come here to explore its canyons, climb its steep walls, and walk its dramatic trails.
Zion's extraordinary beauty affected early Mormon settlers. Members of the religious group came to the area beginning in the 1850s. They thought it looked like heaven. They named the land after a place from the Bible, Zion. Zion means sanctuary or refuge in ancient Hebrew. Mormons were not, of course, the first people to explore the area. Experts say humans first arrived around 12,000 years ago. They hunted very large animals, like mammoths, giant sloths, and camels. Climate change and overhunting caused these animals to die out about 8,000 years ago. Humans changed their methods. They hunted smaller animals and gathered other food. Some 2,000 years ago, a culture centered on what we now call Zion began to form. Scientists know these people as the Virgin Anasazi. They settled in the area and grew crops. They used the water from the Virgin River and depended on the rich diversity of native plants and animals. Over time, many Native American groups called the area home, including the Southern Paiute. The Southern Paiutes called the area Makuntuweap. In their language, the name meant Straight Canyon. The United States Congress moved to protect the area beginning in the early 1900s. In 1909, it became a national monument. It was called Makuntuweap National Monument. President William Taft established the national monument. He described the land as a labyrinth of remarkable canyons with highly ornate and beautifully colored walls, in which are plainly recorded the geological events of past ages. In 1918, the National Monument became a national park. And in 1919, Congress changed its name to Zion, the name used by the Mormons.
Today, almost 3 million people visit Zion National Park each year. Driving is restricted in much of the park during busy months. Instead, visitors travel in small buses that take them to areas where they can walk on paths into the wild areas. Walking is the best way to explore Zion. The park offers visitors many different kinds of paths. Some are short and easy. One easy walk is almost 2 kilometers. It takes hikers to a clear pool of water and waterfalls. Other hikes take most people all day to complete. Some are not advisable for people who are afraid of high places. A hike called Angel's Landing is considered one of the most exciting hikes in America. The trail leads to the top of a rock formation that stands more than 450 meters above the canyon floor. Toward the top of the rock, the walking path becomes extremely narrow. On both sides are very steep cliffs. Hikers can hold on to a rope for increased safety. Most hikers say the views from Angel's Landing make the difficult and dangerous experience worth it. Some visitors favor the lower parts of Zion National Park. One popular area is known as the Narrows. The Narrows is the narrowest part of Zion Canyon. The area has extremely tall canyon walls and unusual hanging gardens. These green areas of wildflowers, ferns, and mosses grow out of the sandstone walls. If you want to explore the Narrows, you must be ready to get wet. Hiking in the Narrows means walking next to, and even in, the Virgin River. If water levels are high, walking in the river can be extremely difficult. Sometimes, hikers may be waist high in water.
Even near the canyon floor, hikes at Zion can be dangerous. The great amount of rock in the area does not absorb water. As a result, sudden floods, called flash floods, are a serious threat. People can help prepare themselves as much as possible for the dangers of Zion National Park at the Visitor's Center. But the risks come with great rewards. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.